With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to Desert Isolation Discs, the show in which, in a cheekily familiar format, we ask people to share the music that they love the most. Thank you so much for listening, it's really appreciated, and if you're interested in appearing on the show, do drop me a line. I'm so pleased to be able to introduce James Heather. As communications boss at South London independent record label Ninja Tune, he's in charge of ensuring as many people hear the label's incredible roster of artists as possible. He's worked with the likes of Bonobo, Cinematic Orchestra and Roots Maneuver, the list goes on, and it's really impressive how Ninja has grown while he's been there from just a handful of people in South London office to having operations either side of the Atlantic and being one of the most respected imprints of this generation. Over the podcast, we'll discuss Ninja's impact on his life, stepping into his artist's shoes and sharing his own excellent piano compositions, one of which is playing now, and his stints on watch for Somali pirates and playing drum and bass gigs in old people's homes. So without further ado, here it is. Yeah, so James, fantastic to be able to sit in a pub with you over a pint and talk about music. I can't think of anything better to do with an afternoon. Thank you for being a guest on Desert Isolation Discs.
Thank you.
Real pleasure. I can only imagine the turmoil that you went through to put together a list like this.
It took a long time.
Yeah.
It took a long time, and I do like many people, I think, a lot of styles. But I got there in the end, and I think it's a good overview.
Yeah.
But I'm still not happy with it. It's not my 8 best songs.
Mm.
It's 8 songs I think, you know, are important to me and
yes.
Just to signpost a life.
What's the first signpost on that journey for you then?
It's Beethoven, Piano Sonata number 8 in C minor, Pathétique. I think that's how you pronounce it.
Mm.
The Grave Allegro. It's one of my earliest memories of listening to music.
Mm.
So it would have been roughly 1991.
Mm.
So I would have been 11.
Yeah.
And I remember just listening to it, actually, kind of through the night. Mm. You know, so in the middle of the night, I'd listen to his piano sonatas, and then I think from that time I subscribed. It was a great composers magazine. It was like a series of magazines that came out every month about a different composer.
Yeah,
and it was also about their life stories. It was quite a human stories of each composer, and I think that's where I got my interest. Beyond the music, there's always a story.
Yeah,
he started to go deaf shortly after writing this song at 27.
Mm.
And eventually retreated into the countryside because he didn't want it. Imagine being a composer and deaf. It's kind of possibly embarrassing. You don't want people to know.
Mm,
and so he retreated and he wrote even more great works. But I just find that very interesting. Eventually he came back and integrated with society again.
Yeah. You sound like a very sophisticated 11-year-old.
Well,
what was the 11-year-old?
I mean, I did listen to a lot of shit as well. But obviously, I'm trying to put across a good side of, you know, I'm kind of a good polish to what I listen to. I also listen to things like Mel and Kim and Prefab Sprout. And
I mean,
that's not shit.
and what were you doing at that time? Where did you live and grow up?
So that was in a place called Highfield in Southampton.
Mm.
So, we live near the university.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite a peaceful, happy upbringing.
Well, let's have a cast into your 11-year-old loves and listen to this video. Thank you. people who, for the uninitiated, what do you do at Ninja Tunes? One of the most amazing labels in the country. It sounds like a good gig.
I guess my title is head of communication. I started off doing press, and I still do press. But I get, you know, communicating music to the public isn't just press, obviously. There's different elements to it. So some of my, I'm part of the marketing team.
Yeah.
I oversee the social media. And started, when that started in 2006, so I was, you know, helping out on that side of things. And so much more, but essentially communications.
I mean, for, you know, for people who are lucky enough not to be inside the media bubble, that they probably don't really understand how that works. But you have to essentially tell thick journalists like me when a great piece of music is about to arrive and why they should be interested in it. And I mean, how do you communicate what it sounds like? I mean, it's incredibly hard.
You're telling stories, really. You're getting the piece of, you know, in the main, we're promoting albums. Obviously, it could be live shows, or it could be something more art. But you're communicating that on behalf of the artist to the industry, and rather than just give it to them in a dry way, you're trying to find the interesting stories behind it.
Yeah,
and you know, hopefully with credibility. You know.
Yeah. So, what's your second choice?
I can remember I was in my back garden. And in my next door neighbour's house, upstairs, a window was open, and there was like this sort of booming music coming out of it, really loud, and quite a lot of sort of rowdy characters in the room.
Yeah.
And I was like, what is that? And I found it interesting, you know. And I knew my next door neighbours at that point, but it wasn't until I was like 13 I became sort of friends with them. They're a bit older than me, 3 years and 5 years older. You know, great friends to this day, Matt and Andy. But basically, Matt was running a pirate radio station from his bedroom. And I remember going through, you know, his crates.
Yeah.
You know, because he used to run this pirate radio station. And there was a lot of Aphex Twin in there. Yeah, and Didgeridoo was one that I really sort of picked up on. And it was live in Cornwall. So the track, Aphex Twin, Didgeridoo, live in Cornwall, 1990.
Yeah.
And just that, like, being 12, 13, just... Obviously, I can't go to a rave on a beach in Cornwall when I'm that age, but you can imagine people doing it.
Absolutely.
And that makes... it's quite romantic in a way. He was asked by his mates who were doing these after-parties on the beach in Cornwall to do a track that would basically finish everyone off.
Yeah.
Just, like, you know, do a track where they can't dance anymore at the end. So it's just this real, you know, intense didgeridoo just going for, like, 5 minutes, and everyone at the end just goes home.
Thank you very much for that, James. Fantastic. So can you tell us a little bit more about Ninja Tunes? How has it evolved since you've been there? We're just up the road from the house that Ninja built itself in Kennington, South London, which is obviously the spiritual and actual home of Ninja
Tunes. It's not been the same since you left as an intern, really.
I've lost a lot of hair since then, James.
Yeah, since you left as an intern, it's just gone down, you know. It's,
but you yourself started a similar route.
So I started in, I believe it was January 2003, as work experience, while I was
so you were a fan of Cold Cut and all the guy DJ Food and all the guys who made that what it was.
I mean, I remember when I was applying to labels, I applied to maybe eight 8 to 10 labels, and I maybe as a lot of people do at that age, but just went through my CD collection, and I think I was actually quite surprised at the time. I was like, so many of these artists are from Ninja Tune, and I didn't necessarily know the label. I knew the artists, whereas now I'm fascinated by labels. I mean, I've been writing for the student paper. I'd interviewed Roots Maneuver fairly recently.
Yeah.
And I'd just done work experience at Enemy and Mojo.
Mm.
So I put all that, you know, I put photocopies and...
And Rodney Smith must have been, you know, a pretty prestigious interview to get at that.
Yeah,
that
21, age, you know, 22. Yeah. Yeah, I interviewed him backstage at the Concord 2, and obviously, like, I promote him now, and so it's a big part
of... He remembers the interview with fondness, I presume.
Oh, yeah, much fondness. We talk about it all the time. so I think I was still at uni, and I did one or 2 days a week to travel down on the 243 bus from Tottenham.
Yeah.
All the way down to Kennington. I think I remember listening to All Things to All Men with Cinematic Orchestra featuring Roots Maneuver on the bus on that journey. So, and then while I was doing work experience, I was asked to go on tour with the band doing the merch desk in Europe for a week when I was supposed to be doing my dissertation. So, so then I became, you know, friendly with the band, and and I'd set up the merch desk, and I'd get the band to sign the Ninja Tune Rizzler.
Yeah.
And then sell them off for more money. And, you know...
Quality merch.
The band joked I made more than them, but I didn't, obviously. But, you know, I was sort of... You know what you're like in your early 20s. You're just sort of super keen, and you just... You know, you just want to make the most of every opportunity. And that's what was going on then, really. And then when I finished uni, I was going to run for student, you know, the... editor of the paper, but then Ninja offered me like a press assistant role, and I was like, oh, I didn't know what to do, and like, I'm in an errand, but I mean, obviously I had to take the Ninja the Ninja thing.
So what's the third piece of music you've got?
So the third piece of music is from 1994. It's Diggable Planets, Jetting. I mean, this is just a podcast to big up my friend Matt, really, because because also he introduced me to this track. I remember one day he had some Christmas money or something. He said, we're going CD shopping.
Yeah.
So I accompanied him, and he was pulling out all these CDs, and I didn't know, you know, there were... I don't know. And he was getting a lot of hip-hop, and one of them was the first Fugees album before they got big.
Yeah.
I think there was a Gravediggers album, and one of them was Diggable Planets. Diggable Planets is something that... You know, I still listen to this day. Mm. It had Guru from Gangstar on it.
Mm.
And it's got that sort of jazz, jazz funk side to it.
Mm.
And I think it's a precursor to a lot of the music I got into, such as like Jurassic 5 and DJ Shadow. It gave me a bit of a backstory context to that scene that came a bit later.
Yes.
I mean, at this time, I was really into grunge. You know, I was sort of an angsty 14-year-old, and I was really into sort of rock. And
how long was your hair then, Jim?
So I had... I mean, I used to cut my own hair sometimes. I dyed it blue, blonde. I had... You know, it was... I looked like an Edwardian poet or something. You know. like Lord Byron or something. you know, I hadn't found my... you know, I was... slightly geeky, hadn't found...
No 14.
I wasn't comfortable yet, and I was into sort of Nirvana and all this stuff, and, Diggable Planets was... had a bit of funk to it, you know?
Yeah.
It's something that I think is very timeless.
Let loose for the hour. I chose the black power, extra fly joy from mocha to yellow paper. And you know I don't delay. Together with my honey like silk and soul, we grow and take you back to like afros. And no quitting or getting jumped by the system. It's all day, all play, got verbs and such. And cuts and crew, no blue eyes to emulate. Some straight, but yeah, we straight up funky.
Obviously, the music industry has changed so much during the time that you've been working at Ninja. Do you think that need the curation that labels give you, when there is so much swamping music fans online, you know, is one of the most important things that an independent label can really offer?
And, you know, you do look to labels to funnel. So if you like the last three albums the label's done, you might take a punt on the fourth. So. So I think labels are, you know, it's nice to be able to trust labels, isn't it?
Absolutely, and Ninja Tune is one of the ones that people really do trust. Is there a particular sort of culture instilled by the Cold Cut guys? You know, when I think about the suits that are usually at the top of the companies that I've ever worked for, I can imagine it's very different.
Well, they're not. I mean, Cold Cut obviously aren't suits.
Mm. very much not. More portmanteau hats.
No, I mean. There's a lot of, you feel a lot of freedom there, really. You do.
I suppose people would probably imagine that you guys get the decks out every Tuesday night, but I suppose it's.
There's two floors at Ninja. Mm. I think the downstairs floor, they have a bit more fun.
They crank it up.
Yeah, more questionable music taste.
I'm with you.
Music taste, but you know, more fun. But.
Yeah. So what's your fourth choice you've got for us, James?
Yeah, so the fourth choice, because I realised that basically 90% of what I listened to in my early teens was rock music.
Mm.
But a lot of it hasn't aged that well, in my opinion. So I've chosen Therapy, Teeth Grinder, for a few reasons. It's not necessarily my best song, but there's a few things to say around it. But
yeah.
I loved Metallica and Nirvana. They were my big two. Metallica at first. I wanted to go to the Milton Keynes Stadium show, but I was too young, really. And I bought the box set, 100 quid. It's a lot of money to a 13-year-old. And Nirvana, I used to listen to Bleach on the way to school. And my dad bought Nevermind in 91. But that's just too obvious, really, to talk about. So, I chose Therapy Teeth Grinder because it's got that link to punk. My dad was working at a local venue called The Brook, which put on a lot of tribute bands, but also, like, the Stranglers came down and they did a gig. And my dad's friend was a...
So your dad used to take you along? Or?
Yeah, well, he worked on the door. Mm. He was, like, a doorman there.
Yeah. So you could definitely get in.
Yeah, I mean, later on I worked at the bar, but my brother was like playing blues. He was in blues guitar bands.
Yeah,
with one of the guys that went on to be in an indie band called Delays.
Ah, I remember that.
So you know, this is the 90s era. So I went to school with Delays.
Ah,
and my brother knew the drummer from Coldplay.
Mm-hmm.
So I know Will from Coldplay from back in the day.
I see.
So I was very much in that sort of it's a different era, you know.
Absolutely.
And my dad's friend was, I don't know if he was a professional photographer.
Yeah.
Too young to realise, really. But he had cameras, and he used to go and meet the acts when they came to Southampton.
Yeah.
So I started to go along with him on occasion.
Mm.
So and I met Therapy. I met him at the Guildhall,
mm.
and that was around Trouble Gum, which was obviously their big album still to this day, I think. But Teeth Grinder was from Nurse, the first album, which was a bit more. And my friends always joke I only like underground and not pop, but like that was like their like Nirvana's Bleach to Nevermind.
I see,
like,
yeah.
Therapy's Nurse to
ramps it up,
Trouble Gum, and it's just like this, a bit like Didgeridoo. It's just like one riff, and it's I think it's very credible. And I met loads of people. I met Liam Gallagher and Noel Gallagher as a 13-year-old in my school uniform. My dad's friend said, "I'm going to go meet Oasis. Do you want to come?"
Yeah.
I am still a weird mix of shyness now, but I didn't sort. I was just observing.
Yeah.
You know, observing, really. Mm-hmm. And I was with my older brother and my dad's friend.
Mm.
But I remember I met Hugh Cornwall, the Stranglers singer.
Yeah.
B.B. King.
Wow.
Yeah, my brother and dad are really, like, blues obsessives. Yeah, that's why I put Therapy in, just because at that time I was sort of, I wasn't personally meeting these people, but I was just tagging along and seeing these sort of famous people and getting a, maybe that rubbed off on me in some way.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, let's have a listen to Therapy then. It's a great excuse for a fantastic band. Away from Ninja, you actually make your own music. You're a pianist, a talented pianist. And I mean, how's that? You mentioned you can be shy. How has it been, sort of stepping out from, you know, behind your own act that you
tend
promote?
I tend to get shy and not do things where I should probably just trust my instinct and do it. And that's what I'm trying to do recently by playing out a bit more and sharing the tracks a bit more. But essentially, like just after listening to those Beethoven tracks, I started learning the piano. I went to traditional lessons and did all the grades up to about 6 or 7 when I gave up the grades. But my granddad taught me composition.
Yeah.
Skill. I don't know how he knew it, but I mean, my granddad used to take apart the piano and put it back together with different tuning methods.
Wow.
So like I was like, and we'd sit there like writing down like stats on different frequencies of sound on taking the piano apart. This is like, I didn't get it, but
he was serious. Wow.
it made me think that you don't have to do traditional grades, but I did them reluctantly for a while, and that gave me a sort of a start.
Yeah.
And then my dad's friend taught me blues piano, and my gran played the piano in a kind of dreamy Debussy style way, but she wasn't as good as my granddad, but she had a distinctive style, which is definitely in my style today. So
so
I played in like school talent competitions when I was 11 and 12.
Yeah.
Always my own competitions. Mm-hmm. I mean, when I went to my traditional lessons, I used to say at the beginning to the teacher, "Can I play my own song for 10 minutes and can you tell me what you think?" That's all I wanted. I just wanted to play my own song to the teacher. She was like, "Yeah, yeah, it's all right. Let's get on with the, you know, shut up, James, let's get on." But then I went on a tour of Austria with the school at 13. Well, I played in between the orchestra,
right?
But with my mate who did drum and bass.
Oh, wow.
So I played the piano over drum and bass, and we were going around like OAP homes in Austria, which was like kind of mental when you think about
it. What was their response to that?
I can't even imagine. I was like 13, and it's really cold in like Salzburg and stuff.
You probably interrupted the Austrian version of Countdown.
But yeah, we did like 5 gigs in 4 days, and we were like played 2 tracks in the middle of the orchestra as the interval.
Yeah.
And like my mate just doing all this like Pesce sort of drum and bass and like Mickey Finn and that, and me doing all this classical piano and. And then I kind of came to uni and I only had my keyboard at uni and I had a massive amp and it was just a hassle getting it anywhere. And then and when I got my job at Ninja, I got a bit shyer with my own music because I was around, you know, hopefully proper talent. And I got a bit, I just carried it on in the background and, you know, I always composed and just did it really. But I was happy not to do it live. It seemed like too much. I just wanted to focus on my job. And.
But how have you found playing live? Because you've been involved with So Far Sounds.
Yeah, I got asked to do a gig a few weeks ago, and it it went well. I was nervous, but it went okay, and I'm really playing more than I ever have, and pushing the composition levels. And now I've been sharing my music, and it's an insight into my artist's frame of mind and how they are sometimes, you know, sensitive about certain things. Because it can be hard.
It's a very vulnerable position.
Yeah, you're putting yourself out there. And
so can you tell us about your next song then?
Yeah, so the next song is DJ Shadow, Building Steam with a Grain of Salt. Yeah, it's from Introducing. It was a massive thing when I heard this album. Can't even begin to explain. It was my friend Will Goodyear, who I met at Taunton's College in 96 in Southampton.
Yeah.
I think we just all went back to his after, a night out.
Yeah.
People were smoking and people were drinking, and we just sat around and he put on Introducing. And I, it's obviously a blurry memory. It's 96, but I pretty much, I don't think I've ever gone so long without talking. I just sat there, and I don't know, we all just seemed to sit there, and at the end we all said that was amazing and put it on again. It was honestly everyone sit around and listen to an album. Oh my God, we haven't heard anything like this. And it just opened up an underground world, I think, for me. And then from that, I bought, about a year later, Cold Cuts album, Let Us Play. And I remember opening up in my bedroom and reading the mad slogans, the political slogans. And I noticed Jello by Afro was on it from the Dead Kennedys, who my dad had Holiday in Cambodia and all these tracks. And I was thinking, what the hell, this is related to DJ Shadow in some way, but it's got Dead Kennedys on. And oh, wow, you can combine all these genres. I just, I think that's what happens when you get older and you mature, you realise that we aren't just in boxes, and even genres, you can guest on different genres. Yeah, it just opened up a new world, and I also had Handsome Boy Modelling School.
Yeah.
At a similar time, the track with Royce Murphy, Truth, was a big one, and Keep It Unreal was just, at the time, Mr. Scruff, everyone came home from the pub, you put that, and it had all the stupid, sort of funny examples, I realised something had been brewing in London I didn't know about, and I liked it. And DJ Shadow had some sort of depth to it that the Ministry of Sound Dance Music didn't. I'm not saying that I'm sure that was deep in its own way, but at the time it just seemed so complex, the DJ Shadow stuff. I guess it was almost Pink Floyd in how he did it, but just for a new generation.
From listening to records, I just knew what to do. I mainly taught myself. And, I did pretty well, except there were a few mistakes that I made that I have just recently cleared up. I'd like to just continue to be able to express myself as best as I can in the instrument. I feel like I have a lot of work to do still. I'm a student of the drums, and I'm also a teacher of the drums too.
So, Jane, tell us about your life away from music then, you love football, you're a Southampton fan.
So basically I'm as into football as I am to music, probably. So I really use football to unwind. So, I go to, me and my mate Jack go to an FA Cup preliminary round game every year.
Yeah.
Where we just pick a random London game. We're going to see proper, not even lower than non-league, something you know. So I go to grassroots football. I love to share music. When I was making cassette tapes all the time as a kid for my mates, like before I made them for girls who didn't listen to. But before I made them for girls who didn't listen to the tape, so I made it for mates. If you boil life down to its simplest form, what I do, really, you don't try not to overthink it. Essentially, I'm just doing what I did then on a much bigger scale. I'm getting an album. I've got my contact list that I've built up over the years, and I'm thinking, who would like that?
So your next song relates to travelling, you said?
Yeah, the track is... I've got no idea how you pronounce it. Oki Seka Melokon Mebun U. That isn't how you pronounce it, but that's...
It sounds like you've made a good go at it.
It's he's a 70s Ivory Coast singer. So in 2000... I went travelling, like but not in a gap year. I left college.
Right.
I didn't know if I was going to uni. I became a travel agent for 18 months. So after a year and a half, I decided maybe I will go to uni.
Mm.
I don't say it's a gap year. It's like a wilderness year. So. I decided to go to Africa for 6 months. I went out to South Africa and did the usual backpacking thing for a few months, the hostels, and then me being me, got a bit bored of that, and there's got to be something more.
Yeah.
There's got to be something more to this, can't just be around backpackers surfing every day, doing shots, playing kit the pool.
Yeah.
Like, there's more. So I was like, I went down to the port in Richard Bay and got on a boat with a French family, paid them 100 quid and said, can you take me to, they were going to Madagascar.
Yeah.
So I got on this little boat. Like, no official passport being signed into the country.
Yeah.
And I was on the boat for a week, and I only had, a little book. I had to ration myself to 50 pages a day, because there wasn't much to do.
Yeah.
And I was doing night watches at night, looking out for pirates and boats, and this is, just off the coast of Somalia.
Yeah, you've got to keep your eyes peeled.
Eventually, we saw land after 7 days, and they pretty much dropped me off in this place called Moran Bay.
Yeah.
Which is... a village in Madagascar where tourists basically never go. So they dropped me off, and I think I had a run with the French guy, and then he went off to the Reunion Islands with his family. And I met this guy who had really broken English from a time in the capital. And he said, stay with my family. So I lived with this. I mean, they weren't even... They were just in, pants. it was kind of a tribe.
Yeah.
They did have some European clothing, and I think I remember a picture of Owen on someone's wall. But they were, huts. And I stayed there for 2 weeks. I remember playing, you remember Quantum Projects? It was like a Blackalicious DJ Shadow thing.
Right, yeah.
I remember playing it to the locals with my cassette tape. And they were all
putting the... For the benefit of the listeners, James is doing the generic DJ nodding with hands to the hip.
So, I mean, at night I'd be on this beat, the Indian Ocean in Madagascar. I'd be listening to, Boards of Canada and just, proper travelling, and eventually I realised I obviously had to leave this village, and this family had been feeding me for 2 weeks. I had to pay them back somehow. So there was lots of cholera around, and there were no roads out of the village.
Yeah.
And I was like, I've got to get out. And these people met this fisherman basically, and he agreed to take me to the major town. It would take 4 days, and there was all this tribal drum music around a campfire at night.
Yeah.
We slept under the sail. A proper adventure, and then eventually we got to the bigger town. I stayed with one of their cousins. I paid them all back. They all went back.
Yeah.
And then I eventually met two American tourists, and then we did an overland tour of Madagascar, and then I eventually went back to South Africa, did an overland tour of Namibia and Botswana with 30 tourists. So that got a bit more normal again, but it made me think that you don't always have to go down the main route. It's interesting.
Yes.
And I think that made me, even with music, go, you can go off-piste, and that's absolutely fine.
So tell us about this Ivorian track then.
Yeah, so it's Oki Seka. My boss, John Moore from Coldcut, is playing it out and playing it on Solid Steel Radio, and
just
picked up on it. And basically, you can't really Google him. And it made me think that a part of what I love about music is that mystique sometimes. And with Oki Seka, it made me think about some artists I like that, like William Onyebor.
Yeah, I was just thinking of him.
Yeah,
that mystery.
That album's always years ago, and then people are just hearing it now.
Mm.
Like Chandrit Singh, the guy who basically used early 303 in his downtime in Bollywood and made proto-acid house. So it makes me think that, even if you're doing stuff that people aren't appreciating now, you just got to keep doing it because you never know.
Ninja then. I mean, I remember one of the most sort of shocking emails I've ever had, and we obviously kept in touch while I wrote my fanzine Shadow Play, and you know, tried to put you up
big
for
up,
as many Ninja
big
Tune
up Shadow Play big up Shadow Play
tried to cover as much as many Ninja Tune releases as possibly could, but was informed that, you know, you were in a road accident about 2008, wasn't it?
Yeah, August.
What exactly
2008
happened?
I was just cycling back from Ninja on my push bike, you know, bicycle.
Yeah.
And I went across Southwark Bridge as normal. And I was at a traffic light and it went green. I was, you know, in the bicycle box at the front, you know, like the green box. And I went forward and a cement mixer went left, didn't see me, kept on going. There was a railing to my left.
Yeah.
Had no room for manoeuvre, basically got dragged underneath the cement mixer. I got dragged down 20 metres of the road, lost a lot of skin off the front of my body, and was awake for it all, and they took off my trousers and top, and I had blood everywhere. I think I might have even had Christmas pants on, which is obviously really embarrassing. You don't expect to be lying in the middle of the road in central London 6 p.m. in August with Christmas pants, but
every experience has to be lived.
I think I did. I definitely had Ninja jeans that never got returned.
Oh really?
So like Ninja jeans, yeah, at the time. I think they were called Ijin Ninja.
Wow.
Ijin jeans, I think. But no, but like in all seriousness, I couldn't talk because I had a massive hole in my jaw because I'd hit my jaw so many times on the road. So I had, but I didn't know. So I was trying to talk, but I couldn't talk, and I had. Like, you know, it's boring going through it all, but essentially I couldn't talk and I went into shock, but I was still awake.
Yeah.
So I was like shaking a lot and some sort of shock.
Mm.
And then eventually got put into an induced coma for a few days.
Mm.
I was operated on, woke up in Royal London Hospital with all my mum had flown in from, she lived in New Zealand, my brother had flown in from Austria. I woke up like a crowd of loved ones around me.
Yeah.
My
they tell you that you're putting. I mean, I don't know if you were conscious, but they tell you they're going to put you.
Vague
in.
Vague memory. I mean, when you're kind of, you know, without being too blunt, like when you're dying.
Yeah.
It was going dark from the outside in. I just remember everything going very dark, and I remember when I got into the hospital, it was going very dark, and I could still sort of focus on someone above my head who was putting something over my head, saying, "I'm going to put you to sleep now." And then I woke up, and my dad was like. Doing a few jokes when I woke up about my fantasy football team. Oh, I made a transfer in your fantasy football to see if I still.
Oh, I see. That's how you got you to wake up. That's
to
that's
see if I still
tactic.
Had my brain. And then I could only write things down. But one of the first things I wrote was I can't remember what I wrote. But
did you say hands off my striker?
Yeah.
Don't change my captain.
Hands off Leon Osman. But. essentially it was. Everyone realised that my brain was probably okay. I was showing that I could communicate with writing.
Yeah.
And when, you know, it was a hairy few weeks, but eventually I got better.
Yeah.
And I didn't lose any limbs, just bent fingers and scars and metal jaws. But essentially, I look fairly normal. You know, it's cheesy, but it makes you stronger. And because I lived, and you do realise after a while how lucky you were.
So the next song was sort of from around that time.
Yeah, no, it definitely from that time. I remember it was November 2008. I was just gone back part time, and it was raining outside, and it was a weird time. You know, I didn't know. It was just odd being back, and I remember getting an email from Will Ashen, who set up Big Dada.
Yeah.
So he could check this demo out, Speech to Bell, and gave me the album, and remember like listening to it, and I just remember being connecting with it so strongly, and just thinking, thank God.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
God, I'm connecting to this. Like, it's like I can do this again. I can pick up my career. Eventually, I took it on in January, and when we did the first proper single, which is Better Days, which is the track Speech to Bell, Better Days, featuring the legend that is Mikachu.
Yeah.
But and I remember just listening to that track for the first time. I felt I could just listen to it on loop forever. That just the whole loop of the it's produced by a guy called Plutonic Lab in Australia. Mm. Haven't really heard from since. Mm. I don't know too much about how it came together because I wasn't around when it was coming together. But I could just listen to that production on loop. It's just, I guess it's related to Digable Planets. It's that whole jazz funk live instrumentation, but also the Better Days. The subject of the lyrics seemed to like mean a lot to me at the time. And obviously, yeah. She won the Mercury, and she had her, you know, challenges with the media. And yeah, me and Speech had a great few years. I was such a fan of the music, and it went so well for a while. And then, and I'll always sort of, you know, I think, especially in London and music, people are always into the latest. There's so much music, and it moves around the fads, and you know, maybe not cool to say you like something from a few years ago. You've got to like the latest hip thing, and but I'll always stand by that Speech to Bell record. It's quality, and she did a second album for Ninja, and that was wicked, really well received. I mean, just at the end of the day, it didn't go top 10.
Yeah.
You know, you can't tell the public what to buy.
No,
but I think there's a definite quality to her. And you know, she's precocious, but some of the most interesting artists are.
Look, I'm slowly building up a savings every day. Although it's hard to save when you're getting low pay. I stop shorting so my days are kind of quiet. I quite like it, the less violent with less lions. I put in extra effort, change up the gear when I'm. I got the cells up and I'm steering them. I'm staying clear with them. Yeah, you know who I'm talking about. It's unnecessary for the name to leave my mouth. Look, words are power, so I manifest a thought. Everything I think is what I thought. And everything I thought is what I feel. Everything I feel is who I am. A woman with nothing's ruined. Yeah, I got a half cup of hope and I'm sipping slow. No more standing on that road. That shit is old. I got no time for time. Wasting time is precious. I only got time for studio sessions now.
So, James, we're on your final track. I want to ask you, you know, we had to put you out into the desert for this podcast.
Is it the same desert island as Desert Island is?
No, we're putting you slightly less hospitable. We put you in the desert. But we do give you, instead of the Bible complete work Shakespeare, a bit hackneyed, you know, in my opinion.
Yeah.
We give you the full Red Dwarf box set and the Tiger Who Came to Tea. And we allow you to have another...
That including the last few series of Red Dwarf, you can keep them.
I mean, yeah, it is
that,
optional.
That weird
especially
coronation,
the one for Dave.
The Coronation Street one was a bit
yeah,
weird,
that was
wasn't it?
That was hard, wasn't yeah. it? That really was. Yeah. But we also afford you another luxury item. What would you fancy?
Football Manager Mobile.
Oh, okay, yeah, that
gets
would,
quite addictive.
That would while away the hours.
So if I had Football Manager Mobile with a battery that never ran out,
yeah.
One that somehow synced into England with the current seat, the right players for every year.
Yes, you don't want to be playing with regen players. And how do you think you'd cope, Castle? Are you quite a practical, dexterous person?
I'd probably worry a lot for the beginning.
Yeah.
As I do, but then be absolutely fine once I, you know, got my systems, my routines.
Yeah.
You know, breakfast at this time, going, you know, I mean, I'm vegetarian, but going catch some tofu another time. Like, I'd probably be all right.
So what's your final choice that you've got for us?
Yeah, so, I mean, there's many... I mean, Speech to Bells on Big Data, but there's many Ninja Nats which are... I mean, it's just so hard. There's Al Montoya, there's Bonobo. I love them all. But but Cinematic Orchestra,
yeah.
I think, just because in they're so standalone and brilliant. But also, I went on tour with them when I first started in Ninja. I'm still working with them to this day. So and also, I've chosen a track which technically wasn't on Ninja. It was on Disney. It was from one of their... The Crimson Wing film soundtrack.
Right.
Cinematic had been there for a long time for me since I started at Ninja. My brother is obsessed by them. He went to see them twice recently, and he doesn't work in music, but he's a massive Cinematic Orchestra fan. And
yeah,
my partner loves Cinematic Orchestra, and whenever I go to see them with her and the track Breathe comes on,
yeah,
it's just a feeling of like unity, and it's just, they're very spiritual band, I think, that, you know, beyond genre and a lot of depth to it. And people I love seem to love them as well. Whereas, you know, sometimes I promote music, no one knows what it is. But, you know, in terms of family, this is Arrival of the Birds, is the track name. It's quite, you know, very melodic. It's just incredibly emotive in the way that, you know, Cinematic Orchestra are one of the best at it, just getting to the core, the core of something in you.
Yeah,
and that's why I've chosen it. And also because I went to see Theory of Everything with my partner recently. The song came on at the end as the last scene. And I had no idea. Like, possibly I'd missed an email. But also it was on Disney, that album.
I heard you blustered out. So yes, of course I organised it.
So it was, you know, I think sometimes in our jobs, you know, you kind of feel like you know everything before it's happened because you get the press releases, all the embargo shit, and, you know, you can't say this, you know, like, you kind of takes a surprise out of life, you know. But I was just sat there watching it, and, you know, especially as my partner loves the band, and then it came on, I was like... Like, you know, I was genuinely excited. Thanks so much.
I think we'll let Cinematic Orchestra play us out. Jay, it's been an absolute pleasure.
It's an honour.
Thank you to listeners for joining us, and do join us again next time.
That's great. Thank you so much. Thank you, Jay.